Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We're about to talk to Russell A. Neverdon Sr., who is a Baltimore City State's Attorney candidate. He's a defense attorney, graduate of Poly, Morgan State University, and the University of District Columbia School of Law. And Russell, I understand you're stuck in traffic.
Yes. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
The one segment that you had earlier talking about the resources from the city, I can attest that I know one thing. Their program with respect to cutting down the trees is definitely working because for some reason they finally decided to cut down the trees that were blocking the power line and kept me blocked in this morning.
Well, if you get here, that would be great, but we can talk until you do, and if you don't, we'll do it another day in person in the studio. And folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. Have a conversation with Russell Neverdon, who's running for state's attorney. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com, or you can log on to our Facebook page, tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. So, Russell, obviously the first easy, typical question would be, why are you running?
Mark, that is a question that's been asked a number of times, and the bottom line is this. Having been born and raised in Baltimore City and my beginnings and how I got to where I am, I have not forgotten what Baltimore has done for me as far as having grandparents who stepped in, neighbors who helped step in, aunts and uncles. It was a community effort where people were vested in me, and so at this point, the climate of what we're dealing with in our city has just gotten completely out of control. And, you know, it's not about money. Having a successful practice is one thing, but I just can't live and know that our city is falling apart, and I'm tired of complaining about it. And so I just said, you know what, as a defense attorney, I know where the holes are open, or some of these cases are not being solidly prosecuted. And so there needs to be a change, but systemically there needs to be a change, not just in how cases are prosecuted, but the office in and of itself needs to be changed.
So now what has to be changed? I mean, there's always been a lot of tension in the community since Greg Bernstein was elected, though the sense is, so let me talk about that. So what is that what's motivating people? What is it about this administration of the state's attorney's office that you are not satisfied with?
Well, what I'm not satisfied with is the lack of community as a part of the process. What we're looking at is that once upon a time in Baltimore, the community believed in the criminal justice system, they believed in the police department, and we've gotten away from that. It is now in a climate where the criminals no longer fear the system. We are constantly in fear of the criminals, and we've got to change that paradigm. There's a distrust, and that's something that has to change. There's a lack of transparency with the office, what it does. I did a canvas in random neighborhoods of about 100 people. 98 of the people had no clue what the office represented other than the state's attorneys locked people up, and that was appalling. That's not what the state's attorney does. That is the role of the police department. The state's attorney's office is to administer justice and make sure that those cases that have merit, that are factually sound, can be presented before a tribunal, be it a judge or a jury, and let them make a determination as to whether or not someone can be proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt.
So what is it that, what specifically would are you saying that this administration of the state's attorney's office has not done that it should do? Where you think it's, let's say, failed on what you first started out with, which was literally the criminals being arrested, prosecuted, and jailed. What are they not doing?
Well, let me break it down from this standpoint. One, we hear about crime being fought. We're fighting crime, but we're not effectively, efficiently, and equitably prosecuting crime. We've got a dynamic where we have an outbreak of violent crime, but that's not the majority of crime that's taking place in Baltimore City. Most crime in Baltimore City is not violent crime. So we have a cycle where people are entering into the system, and they're coming right back out, and then they're going right back in. And so that is something that has to be fought at a level of thinking outside the box and shift our resources to building relationships with local government agencies, nonprofit organizations, and ensure that we're dealing with those who are dealing with drug addiction issues, mental health issues, and pushing them in the right direction and ensuring the part of follow-up or probation, when we work things out, that they are actually getting the services and making that a part of their condition, that they're getting those kinds of services. Because if you have somebody go through the system and you don't make them better and they're dealing with the same issue, they're going to come back and do the same thing. So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is we're not investing in a preventative standpoint. We have to invest in our children. If we don't make sure that they have literacy, that they don't have job readiness, and that they don't have technology skills, we need to make sure that we're redirecting and re-educating the children when they come into the system as far as the Department of Juvenile Services and when they come into DJJ. We've got to make sure that we're redirecting the kids and putting them in the right direction so that they become productive citizens and not participating criminals.
Let me get a phone call in here. People are calling in to talk to you. We're talking to Russell Neverdon, an attorney who is running to be the next city to run in the election to be the next city state's attorney here in Baltimore City. 410-319-8888. Otis in Park Heights, you're on the air. Welcome, Otis.
Hello, how are you doing today?
Very well. Can you hear him, Russell?
Yes.
Good, okay. Go ahead, Otis.
Okay, I just want to give a shout-out to the Morgan Crad. I'm a fellow Morgan alum. But the question I have is, I would like to know, as the state's attorney, what process or what plan of action do you have to stop police from actually the reason why most of the time the cases don't get prosecuted is because the police usually either arrest people illegally, search their cars illegally, or do something that when it gets to the courtroom, the judge sees it and then throws it out. So how are you going to counteract that nonsense from the beginning? Because most of the arrests that they make are fraudulent arrests anyway. So that's why the cases are getting thrown out. It's not just because they don't have evidence. They're making bad arrests. So what do you plan to do in terms of that?
The primary focus and that's one of my five-step platforms, and that comes under accountability. And that means holding the Baltimore City Police Department accountable. And when I say accountable, not so much in a negative way, but also making sure that the state's attorney's office has got their sleeves pulled up, they're entrenched, they're working with the police directly, that they're reviewing these statements of probable cause, and more importantly, they need to be in the academy when the new recruits come in from the very beginning. I don't see how you can have once a year in-service training where a prosecutor gives you a couple of hour lecture on what's the proper way to write a statement of probable cause or how to assess a situation, and you've had bad habits all year long and you get 2 hours and all of a sudden think that that's going to correct it. We need to be involved from the very beginning with helping train them on the issues and the legalities of probable cause and effectuating appropriate arrest. And then we need to have an ongoing and continuing relationship. We need to get our associate assistant state's attorneys actually out into some of the districts on a rotating basis so that we see what's going on, what the officers are confronted with. Do some ride-alongs on a regular and ongoing basis. You have a better relationship that way, and that way you give the officers the kind of support that they have, and we minimize having these cases just clog up the system and end up getting dismissed where we waste resources, we waste time, and you only discourage the community to believe that this is a system that we're just going into a vicious cycle where nothing's happening. You're locking folk up, but nothing's happening.
So, Otis, I appreciate the call, and I want to kind of add a little bit to that and ask a question about what you said earlier. One of the debates that took place in the last election for state's attorney was when Mr. Bernstein said that we are not a social service agency. We're a prosecutorial arm, and our job is to keep the city safe and to prosecute crimes, which is different when you were just saying. I mean, so in terms of the budget resources and what goes on, what does that mean for the state's attorney to invest in our children? How would you flesh that out? What does that mean?
Well, to invest in our children means that we have to take, and here's the thing, look, we know that money is a driving circumstance that will dictate exactly what one can do. But there are numerous not-for-profit organizations out here. There are philanthropic organizations out here that are ready, willing, and able to partner up where it comes to investing in our youth. So here's a prime example. Say you have a young man who's coming in for the first time who's got a possession with intent to distribute. When you look at what the circumstances are surrounding that, at that point, it becomes, to me, paramount that we make sure that we have relationships with other agencies and other organizations that are going to work with that child so that they're not just being warehoused and going through the system of, okay, you're on probation, you're on community detention, and you just stay out of trouble. You need more than just stay out of trouble. You need to make sure that we have working relationships, that they're helping redirect and re-educate these kids on having opportunities beyond just working through that one situation. That's not happening. Doing criminal defense, a lot of these kids are just happy. I'm not sitting in baby bookings, or I'm not going to have to go to a Cheltenham or another a locked-in facility. And that's all their mindset is. I've escaped this situation, but we haven't done anything to change that dynamic.
So, well, we have to take a break in a couple minutes. Why don't we go to break so I can come back and ask the question? One of the things I want to talk about is Professor Doug Colbert of the University of Maryland Law School has been pushing for a long time to have lawyers at bail review as a way to unclog the system and keep people out of jail who are left there for months waiting for trial. So we're going to take a brief break and come right back with Russell Neverdon. And when we do, that'll be the first question. And we'll also go to Mike in Baltimore for another caller coming up. Stay with us. We're talking to Russell Neverdon, who is running to become the next city state's attorney. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and on our way back to our conversation with Russell A. Neverdon Sr., who's running to become the next city state's attorney, who made it into the studio. Russell, good to see you.
Good to see you in person.
The Mark Steiner Show is sponsored in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's National Foreclosure Settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or 877-462-7555. So before we go to the phones and raise another issue, let's really quickly. So what about Doug Colbert and his other people's argument there should be lawyers at the first hearing when people go in?
I think that's a solid, great idea that needs to happen, because all too often what I'm confronted with is when that initial assessment takes place, you're looking at a sheet of information that basically has charges, not necessarily convictions, but everything, every criminal contact that a person has had. And so somebody's sitting there and they're making a determination as to what bail is an appropriate bail. And it's nothing against the commissioners. You know, they get whatever training they get, but they're looking at something. They're making a determination as to whether or not there are sufficient facts that are brought before them. You need to have some legal training to be able to look at that and say, well, there is probable cause or there isn't probable cause. So I think that lawyers need to be a part of that process. And more importantly, there needs to be more exercise of prosecutorial discretion. So I think there needs to be both sides of the table to be able to look at those things so that we don't have the system being backlogged with cases that really end up sitting, somebody sits, and then you end up throwing it out. So you can't compensate them for the amount of time that they've sat in jail. It's just like, oh, well, you know, we have a good faith right. exception. And that doesn't fly in the face of I've lost 2-3 months of my life. My job's been jeopardized. I can't pay my bills. And now you're just telling me, oh, well, I'm sorry. We didn't have enough information. Now we're going to dismiss the case.
410-319-8888. Russell Neverdon in the studio, running to be the next state's attorney. Mike, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Yeah, I just had a question in terms of the candidate's view on the current state of not only the judicial system in Baltimore City, but pretty much this country at large. I just like to know, does he think that the current state of affairs is fair? Does it need to be maintained, or do we need some serious overhauling of the system? Is it working for everyone, or is it working just for a few? And the reason I ask this question is because the way the candidate is speaking, it seems like he is maybe like not really having a grasp on what's happening right now. Like,
why do you say that?
Because the state of affairs in this country is such that we should be in crisis mode. We shouldn't be attempting to, like, have a Band-Aid approach or maintain what's going on. We should be
Okay.
Screaming about what's going on out here.
So let me let Mr. Everdon respond to that, so we only have like 10 minutes left in the segment. I want to give him a chance.
Okay. Well, I'm glad he actually brought that up, because let me make it absolutely clear. This is not a Band-Aid approach, what I'm talking about. The questions that were posed were specifically identified with some of the changes that I thought need to be made, and there needs to be an overhaul of the situation, period. My approach is this. If you're going to fight crime, particularly in the city that I live in, which is Baltimore City, where violent crime is becoming epidemic, you have to look at violent crime that's going on right now from that and from an analogous view of a deadly disease. And a deadly disease, like cancer or any other thing, most of those who are going to treat it generally just do with the chemotherapy. We're going to aggressively try and just deal with what is killing off the body. That's not my approach. My approach is a holistic approach. Not only do you have to deal with killing off what's greatly affecting us, which is the violent crime, we need to put a lot of our attention and effort and energy into the violent crime, but we also have to take the recognition that most crime is not violent. That means most people who are going to come into the system come in and they come right back out. And if we don't take a treatment mentality of being able to redirect these people and make sure that they get the right resources and support, they're going to come right back in. And so we still have the issue of crime still reoccurring. And then you have to take from the preventative standpoint. So one is an aggressive, the other is treating the actual symptom that is happening at the time, and the other is preventative. That is the most holistic approach to treating any deadly illness that is going on. So we know that just prosecuting everything doesn't work. And here's why. Think of it from a mediological standpoint. When you aggressively treat something, just like you can kill off the bad stuff that you want to get rid of, so do the possibility of good things getting caught up. And that's what I want to avoid. So my platform is about equitable and efficient prosecution for everyone. No one is above the law. The law applies to all. Crime will be addressed. If you break the law, it's going to be addressed. But I do think that given what we're dealing with right now, our priorities has to be with restoring the safety in the community first and foremost, and number two, restoring the community such that it begins to police itself again.
410-319-8888. We're here with Russell Everdon, running to be the next state's attorney. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. By the way, producers, I think my phone is in the other room, so you can check my tweets. I don't have it with me. Or log onto our Facebook page, or write us at steinershow@gmail.com. 410-319-8888. Yesterday, we were down taping interviews with the family of Tyrone West, who are picketing the police department. Yesterday, every Wednesday, they go out and picket at 5 o'clock at some government location, demanding to know what happened to their loved one who was killed while in police hands. So, and people have complained that there have been about the lack of prosecution that some people think should have taken place of people who have died at the hands of police. How would you respond to all that? And that also leads to the issue of transparency that you raised.
Well, I think that prosecution has to take place whenever there are sufficient facts that warrant that charges should be brought. And so I think that all too often what we're seeing is that relationship, which goes back to that public trust. If you don't restore public trust, where the people believe, okay, I understand you have to have a working relationship with the police department, but you have to be above that and be prepared that when something comes across your desk, to prosecute it the same as you would any other person. So I don't have a problem prosecuting the police. I heard, matter of fact, I think on your show that someone said that it pained them to have to prosecute the police. And my attitude is it should also pain you to have to prosecute that first-time offender who has got a simple marijuana possession, who no longer can get his college funding federally. It should pain you for that woman who unfortunately had to solicit and sell her body because she's got a drug dependency. It should pain you that way. Crime should pain you, period, to have to prosecute it. But it's a necessary evil. We have to prosecute in order to keep society in order, and we need to make sure that our city is safe. And so when we're dealing with the police department, they hold public trust. They have a job to do. So when you cross that line and you break the public trust, and then the second fold part of it is you do something that commits, as far as I'm concerned, is a crime. When you violate the civil rights of someone, when you aggressively engage someone and you bring about physical harm and there's no probable cause or justification, it's the same as any other criminal. That's an assault, and it should be prosecuted accordingly.
So that leads to two questions in my mind. In the case of Anthony Anderson, did you read the state attorney's report?
I did.
Okay. So, and in the medical examiner's report in that case.
Yes.
So would you have handled that the same way or differently if you were state's attorney after the investigation was done? And how would you have done the investigation differently? Those two questions.
First and foremost, I would have had an outside agency look at the case if I had to go to the Department of Justice. I mean, we keep hearing about these relationships that the current administration has with the state, with the federal law enforcement and other agencies. You need to have a separate and apart, because the problem is there is a relationship. It's just like if you and I had a relationship for years and someone comes to me and says, well, Russell, Mark did X, Y, and Z. The first thing I'm going to say is, no, I know Mark. No, I can't believe that. That's already hindered your ability to be neutral. So there needs to be another agency or entity with some teeth that can actually look at that and say, look, you've got a bad situation. We're going to present it to you just like you would any other case that goes to a grand jury, and you all have to be prepared to prosecute this case. So that's the first thing. That would be my approach as far as investigating it. And then number two, look, and I deal with this all the time, when you deal with homicide cases, when that medical examiner makes a determination it's a homicide, then you go from that point forward. It's a homicide. It's the wrongful taking of life of another person. And that's how it's identified. Whether you say it's justified or not, you still go through the process.
So do you think you would have prosecuted in that case?
I would have prosecuted.
So and so when you and we only have like 4 or 5 minutes left in the segment. I apologize, but we'll have you on for a longer time next time. So very quickly, when you talked about the marijuana arrests, what would you do about that? Would you not prosecute? Would you do something different?
I think that I would try. Well, number one, I would work with our local legislators and say that you need to work with us, because that's the largest population of things that are coming through. And to me, it's not a gateway drug. It's a gateway into getting people in the system. That's the problem. A simple possession is enough to jeopardize. And here I am at my alma mater at Morgan State University. If I had ever had you look at the Pell Grant and those things that are available to kids, you're already, when we're talking about Baltimore City in and of itself, we have a large population of socioeconomically disadvantaged persons. And so if you've got a kid who's graduated high school, trying to go to college, and then you got a simple possession and you can't get that financial aid, you've already gotten limitations. So what are you doing? So, no, I personally would like to legalize marijuana so we take the criminal element out of it, and therefore we can focus more on the multiple shootings that are taking place on a regular basis, the 9-year-olds who are being shot, and those who are being raped, robbed, and carjacked by gang members and drug organizations.
So we're going to have you back on very soon. How do people get in touch with their campaign?
You can reach out at www.neverdonforbaltimore.com, and the phone number is 410-491-0068. Check us out. We have Facebook, Twitter. We have ongoing events that are happening. So if you plug in, listen, follow what we're doing. We do listening parties where we go into the homes of people and we listen to what they have to say. I'm not talking at the people. I'm listening to what the community has to say to make sure that is a part of my platform. And what I alluded to in the very beginning is I have a 5-point plan, which is called TRACE: transparency, restoration of public trust, accountability, community involvement, relationships, and inclusion in the process, and equitable and efficient prosecution.
Russell A. Neverdon, Sr., we will have you back on very soon. It was good talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And the clarity of your thought was good to hear.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us.
All right.